The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day. Here is Harold Nicholson, diplomatist and writer, to open the program.
This is Harold Nicholson introducing this week's London Forum. And we've got round the table, we've got Mr. A.J.P. Taylor of Magdalen College, Oxford. We've got Mr. Don Darras, who was until very recently a newspaper correspondent in Moscow. And we've got Mr. Edward Crankshaw, who has written books about Russia and who was attached to our military mission in Russia some time. And what we're going to discuss is this. What is the main principle behind Russian foreign policy? Is it communism? Or is it imperialism? But before we get down to those definite words and terms, I think it would be good to start with the first question. Is Russia an aggressive power? Now, Taylor, what do you feel about that?
I've gone into trouble in the past, Nicholson, by often saying that Russia isn't an aggressive power. What I meant by that is that, so it seems to me, in her day-to-day reactions, Russia simply proceeds, so she supposes, by trying to protect herself. That I really believe that the greatest motive in Russian policy is anxiety, but the method by which the Russians try to protect themselves is building up a barrier or buffer all around themselves and pushing this buffer further and further away, so that in practice it comes to be very like expansionism.
Yeah, what we used to call zones of influence exactly. In the early days. Well, Crankshaw, what do you read about it?
I think that's awfully true as far as it goes.
I think one ought to go a little farther, too. I wouldn't use the word aggression. I would say there was a persistent outward push about Russian policy, which, in its effect on other people, does amount to it, aggression. She tends to regard the consolidation of buffers as a very definite form of acquisition for acquisition's sake, and at the back of her mind always is this feeling that really the world would be a better place if more of it was Russian. It's not aggressive. It's not aggression in the sense that Nazi Germany was aggression, but it is aggression insofar as it affects other parts of the world.
Neighboring countries and ones further away.
Neighboring countries and ones further away.
Well, Darras, have you got anything to add to that question?
Yes, well, I would probably rather like to support Crankshaw's last remark that Russian policy is not aggressive in the sense that Nazi Germany before the war was aggressive. I think possibly we're all agreed on that. I think that when you talk of aggression, you have to make possibly a clear differentiation between the military side, the purely military side, and the ideological side. Now, I would say that from the military, purely military standpoint, I don't see any direct evidence of Russian aggression or of her intention to act as an aggressor country. But I think that in an ideological sense, quite obviously, Russia wants to push her ideology onto other countries as much as she possibly can do. She wants, in other words, to foment the forces of revolution inside capitalist countries throughout the world, and particularly inside those countries that are closely bordering on the Soviet Union, because in that sense, then, the more those countries are friendly to her in an ideological sense, the more happy Russia is.
Yes, but Darras, don't you think that all that amounts to saying is that Russia, like any great power, tends to push where she finds an opening? I find it difficult to see, at this stage, Eric, that there's more aggression in Russian policy, I was going to say, than in the policy of any great power, because it is the nature of a great power to seek elbow room for itself. Where Russia perhaps appears more aggressive, surely, is that, owing to geographical conditions and owing to political conditions of the 20th century, there is more elbow room for her to push in.
Can I cut in there?
Go on, Cranko.
Is that all right? And say that the fundamental difference between the Russian pushing out and the pushing out of other great powers is that in practical politics, other great powers in the past have tended very definitely to seek out neutral zones between each other's interests. Russia does not. Russia has always sought to turn what should have been a neutral zone into her zone, which has made the other great powers have to find another neutral zone, which Russia has then tended to turn into her zone.
I mean, it is, of course, that, you see, you get that in old Russia just the same. I mean, that was, I mean, you the Anglo-Persian agreement.
I was going to ask you about that, Nicholson, whether you thought that in Persia before 1914, that it was solely the Russians who encroached in the neutral zone.
Well, in their own zone they did.
The Russian zone
and the British zone and the neutral zone.
I don't think it would be fair to say they encroached in the neutral zone. But they turned their own zone into a Russian protectorate, which wasn't the game.
No, but after all, in the secret treaty of 1915, we finally were allotted the whole of the neutral zone.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there is all that difference between Russia and any other great power. The tiresome thing about Russia is that she is a great power and can pursue a really independent policy.
Okay,
The one point I just wanted to make there in reply to Taylor, a lot of what he says I certainly agree with, but that in making a comparison between Soviet Russia today and Tsarist Russia in the past, I think you can't do it solely on a sort of great power basis divorced entirely from contemporary politics. I would say this, that the difference between Tsarist Russia of the past and her foreign policy and Soviet Russia today, there are very many similarities in relation to expansion, in relation to aims, in relation to the general principle of power politics, but that I would say the basic difference is that Soviet Russia today is the center, the spiritual center of international communism, that in all countries throughout the world you have today communist movements who owe their allegiance, their final allegiance to Moscow as a sort of Rome of communism, and that as a consequence there are forces working in all countries which themselves and of their own volition want to change the system to a system that will be suitable to Russia. That, I would say, is a basic difference from a Tsarist Russia with a purely power policy, and introduces a new element into it in my mind.
Well, I think we've got to, as a definition of the first question, is Russia an aggressive power? We've got several views. I think they all boil down to the fact that if not aggressive, and aggressive is just a word, at least expansionist, and that expansion may be due to anxiety, to natural dynamism, or to ideological crusading spirit. But we all do agree, I think, that there is, let's use the least provocative word, that there is a very powerful tide of expansion operative in Russian policy today.
A pressure.
We're not saying whether it's good or bad. I mean, we're just saying it exists, mm-hmm. an energy. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we now must, if we're going to convey anything to listeners, we must get a little more definite definition of what that pressure is. Is it, for instance, nationalist? Is it the traditional belief in Holy Russia having some special mission from the world which existed long before communism was thought of? Or is it entirely animated by the desire to give to the world, as you suggested, Eris, this new doctrine which they sincerely believe will make for the greater happiness of mankind? Which of it is those? What do you think, Cranko?
I think much the heaviest emphasis ought to be put on the traditional Russian line of expansion. I don't believe people do change by changing their philosophies at all. And we've not changed fundamentally in this country, although we've got a government which has made certain 19th century statesmen raise their eyebrows with horror. We still behave in the same sort of way. And the Russians have changed their government, and they still behave in the same sort of way.
You think that policy is dictated by geography, not by ideas?
I think it's enormously dictated.
Well, I rather agree with you. What do you feel about it?
Do you feel that it is entirely ideological, and that there is not this, either this old messianic feeling or the newer and the 19th century urge for power? What we call imperialism.
My own view is that it's something of a combination between the two factors. I agree so much with what Crankshaw has said in the sense of Russia today still being Russia. Whether Tsarist as it was in the old days, whether Soviet as it is today, there is undoubtedly a great continuity in Russian character, in Russian temperament, and indeed there are many parallels between her policy today and her policy in Tsarist days. In that particular context, I may say it is interesting that in a modern Soviet society, they should, in fact, extol the Tsars of the past to the extent to which they do today.
The
remote past, yes.
They still do that.
I was thinking rather of their building up today of Peter the First as a great national hero. Now, there have been films, plays, all sorts of things about Peter the First, and today he is built up as a great Russian national character.
But they don't build up Catherine the Second.
They don't build up Catherine the Second, it's true. Although there is still, I have seen memorials to her, but she doesn't get a big publicity build-up, it's true. So, just on that point, but as I say, I think there is a great deal of the past in Russia's policy today. I think that ideological reasons certainly are extremely important and should not be overlooked in the general context.
Well, Ted, what do you mean about
Yes, I do agree with Crankshaw in one sense. From a practical point of view, whoever sits in the Kremlin is bound to behave like people who sat in the Kremlin in the past. And just as he goes out the same door and sees the same view and has the same weather, there are certain practical immediate problems, geographical problems. I mean, the problem of Poland, looked at from the Kremlin, presents itself as the problem of Poland, presented itself to Ivan the Terrible or to Peter the Great. That I agree with. On the other hand, I do feel that Crankshaw enormously underrates the new element which is brought in by Marxism. Not only the dictatorial committee which rules Russia, but the great mass of people who have anything at all to do with running Russia, down to factory managers and local party bosses, are deeply and profoundly impregnated with Marxism. They have this creed which is more than the traditional Russian messianic creed.
You really would say it was more than that.
Oh, Marx,
it was very strong, you know, in the early 19th century.
That's quite true, but now Marxism, one may say, has come providentially, one uses that word without too many implications, Marxism has come providentially to the assistance of Russian messianic outlook.
Yes, I think that's exactly right.
Marxism provides believers with the one absolutely confident creed that you can have in the world today. It's also before the Russian Revolution that Marxists were described as God's prompters, the people who always knew what was going to happen. And that is essential, I believe, to an understanding of Russian policy. Grasp that the people who are running it are Marxists, that they have absolute confidence that their cause and outlook is going to triumph, that they're not disturbed in that way by setbacks. They try it one way and they try it another. They're convinced that capitalism is going to crash, that communism is going to be victorious. That isn't to say, and I don't think Marxists have ever been committed to this, that they will struggle the whole time to cause world revolution.